welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 273. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Feels good joining you and celebrating the victory over the bye yet again.
We nailed it. Nailed the bye.
Well, things happen during the bye. I mean, we have a new starting slot corner, and you know, the Niners squeaked one out over the Cardinals, and, you know, things happened.
Well, the Niners squeaking one out over the Cardinals wasn't exactly a win. I mean, I would have felt better if the Cardinals actually got that win, being up 16-0.
Sure. I would have loved to seen the Cardinals win that game. But the thing about it is that I watched the 49ers, and they're now broken on the inside. And so that's nice.
The Niners are broken. The Rams are broken. The Seahawks are not broken.
No. But yeah, an interesting week of football. Unfortunately, the rest of the league didn't come through and try to really help us out at all within our standings here in the division and the conference. But at the end of the day, it was a fun week of football. You got to get a better bead on some of the other teams. I don't know about you, Brandon, but when the Hawks are playing, like, it's that game, and if I can sneak in another game or two, fine. I actually had a Sunday to sit at home, just watch football, not talk to a soul. It was amazing. And I feel like I got a little better sense of some of the teams around the league.
Well, this is the time of year where you need that sense of teams around the league, because it's going into the final six games. The way the NFL does the schedule, they do it pretty neat with how they do a lot of these division rival games toward the end. And I especially enjoy how it worked out for the 49ers, because now they face three 8-win teams in a row. So that's going to be fun to watch. And I have to think it's going to work out okay for the Seahawks. I know they say that we have one of the top four or five toughest schedules. That's because we play the Rams. That's because we play the 49ers. It's because the NFC West has been the toughest division in football.
It really has up to this point. I mean, even with Arizona being the quote-unquote bottom feeder of the division, like, they're still a pretty decent football team. I mean, they can make some plays. Their scheme has worked for a year, and that's cute. I don't think that's, again, a long-term way to play football, but it worked for a year, and that's nice.
The nice thing to me is that now it has people talking about, oh, how about these up-and-coming Cardinals? Who does that leave for the bottom of the division now? Oh, you know what? The Rams. It might be the Rams. And watching that stadium come that much closer to being constructed, and to see the LA Chargers having a hard time filling their stadium, it's kind of, I think the NFL's starting to worry about this issue of football working in Los Angeles, although maybe it will work out well. If it's going to work in Vegas, where everybody comes into town to watch a football game, maybe everybody will just go to cheer on the opposing teams at these stadiums.
Well, spoiler alert, but the NFL is not going to work in Vegas, and it's not going to work in LA. It doesn't work in an area completely full of transplants.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't. There's just, the fandom is too diverse. I mean, I understand the hockey team has done okay in Vegas, but who wants to drive to Vegas to go watch a football game?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you could basically play it in a toilet bowl, and I'd rather go do that.
What's the other transplant area that you would think about of where football would work? Because I guess I think of Glendale and Phoenix being one of those areas that's mostly transplants, and the Cardinals have had a hard time filling their stadium too.
I'd say probably about the best example would be of it working would be New York itself.
And it's actually New Jersey.
Right. But it does also happen to be where the largest population center is in the entire United States. So just by mass, they have enough people to make a draw for their teams. But yeah, there's just the diversity is just too high and nobody cares.
Well, we're not here to talk about what football is going to work in LA or where is it going to work for expansions. We're here to talk Seahawks football.
Yeah, this took too long. I'm sorry, man. We got off the skis way too early because, we got a cool game coming up against the Eagles.
And you mentioned some of the news that broke over this week. We have a new slot corner, Jamar Taylor, who's been getting hammered by fans, by getting hammered by analysts. He's now on the street, which sucks for him, but he doesn't have to be hammered by Seahawks fans anymore, because now Ugo Amadi, apparently the new starting nickel corner.
And look, Jamar Taylor, was he perfect out there as the nickel corner? No. Did he play okay? Yes. I don't understand the complete level of hate that people had for Taylor. I mean, he's not a lockdown.
It's not like they gave him a contract like Justin Coleman got. If he would have been playing like that with a Justin Coleman type contract, then yeah, then well, I now think that he would have been even higher.
Right. But yeah, Amadi looked like he had potential to play the slot. And, you know, a lot of people were looking at that as, well, that's going to be the logical conclusion of this is Amadi's going to play a lot more as your nickel DB. And I'm not sure that's exactly the case. I kind of see it a little differently. I think this is a way for them to get Diggs and Blair out on the field at the same time. I think they'd rather get Blair back there in the deep secondary playing safety and then bring Diggs up to play slot corner or that sort of hybrid role a little bit like Cam played, where he was kind of in the box. He could cover the third receiver or the fourth receiver if need be, but he was also in the box to play the run. And then you also get Blair on the field who's a hitter. I kind of see it going more that direction than a lot of Amadi time, but I could be dead ass wrong.
Well, I think we'll start to get an idea maybe after a week or two how they want to do it. I don't know if free safety is best suited for Blair. It kind of seems like strong safety is his best spot. It also seems like free safety may not be the best place for Bradley McDougal. And we saw
McDougal can play free safety.
Oh, he can. I just don't know if it's his best place.
So who's the best free safety on the team?
Well, based on what we saw against San Fran, maybe it's Diggs.
Okay. So do you feel like if they do that, then it makes two positions weaker rather than just one?
I don't know. I don't know if McDougal can play the slot or I don't necessarily see Blair in that spot. So
it's going to be Amadi, King, or Diggs. Those are going to be your three candidates that will play in the slot.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're
right.
As
your nickel corner.
So I am curious to see how they'll handle it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I know they enjoy Amadi's skill set and everything that he brings to the team. And he's very versatile, a gamer, right? I know they want to see more of Blair on the field. They've liked their glimpses that they've seen of him.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to get him the reps. And obviously, after the game against the 49ers, Diggs has shown that he absolutely belongs. Like, he's shown up and he's a professional and he's a guy that we could really use out there. So it'll be interesting to see how Ken Norton juggles that.
Hey, we have depth. How about that? I'm okay with that, too. If that's how it works out, and if Amadi is the best nickel guy to be out there, and
right.
You find the two best guys to play the safety spots, and maybe Blair just is your backup safety for now, and you actually have some depth. You can rotate McDougal in and out or in certain situations. Maybe that's how it works, but It does feel good to have some depth now going into these last few games.
It does, especially in the secondary. And we saw the secondary step up against the Niners. Now, they're going to have interesting matchups against the Eagles. And by interesting, I mean not a lot to do. So it'll be fun to watch that.
The Eagles, not much of a vertical team, are they, Adam?
No, they're not. Before we kind of get into the minutiae of the Eagles and all that, I kind of am curious as to your overall feeling about the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, what when I say here comes the Philadelphia Eagles, what do you think?
I did watch a little bit of Eagles this week, and I watched their game against Buffalo. It was probably their best game that they've looked this season, and just by the final score, I wanted to have a look at them that way. Mm-hmm. They struggle against the Patriots. You know, they lost. They were the one loss to the Falcons when the Falcons were, 1-6, 1-7. And that was a game that they really should have won going down the stretch. I guess when I think about the Eagles, I think about Carson Wentz. I feel watching him, it's almost like a younger version of Ben Roethlisberger where you try and bring him down, but he's just like bouncing off dudes and, gets the ball away. He's one of those guys at quarterback who's frustrating. When I think of their run game, I like Sanders. They're having a lot of injury issues there. Their deep threats, Aguilar, we've talked about throughout the year as not being able to actually catch passes. So that's been their big problem, injury issues. They don't have a deep threat. I guess the thing that defines them to me is their defense, and they do have a pretty tough defensive line.
Yeah. It's funny because my first gut reaction when I was going to research a little bit about the Eagles, I was like, well, this is a pretty good team. I mean, I start thinking about the names that are on the team, right? I mean, whether it's their offensive line or even their backs. Jordan Howard's a good back to go along with Sanders.
Yeah.
Carson Wentz, obviously one of the best young talents in the league, right?
You Deshaun think about Jackson.
Doug Peterson. Him being injured, I knew he wasn't going to.
Sure.
Yeah, so he's gone.
Zach Ertz is a tight end.
Zach Ertz and Alshon Jeffery is a name, right? I mean, that's a guy that was the guy that stretched the field for them a couple years ago. You think of their coach, Doug Peterson, being a very creative offensive caller. And then you think about that defense with, you know, Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham and like Jenkins. And now they have their two cornerbacks and Darby and Jalen Mills. And you look at this team and it's just chock full of names and you go, wow, like they should be, you know, a very formidable team to play. And then you look at their record and then you look at some of their performances. And I, like you, I went back over the last 2-3 games of Eagles film and just watched it on the condensed version. But the number one takeaway I got from it was the defense plays decent.
Yeah.
And the offense has legitimately no juice. None. It doesn't. And it's very bizarre. And it's almost as if Doug Peterson's creativity was sucked out of him as a play caller. The plays are very vanilla. They rely pretty much completely on the running game to get things going. And if that's stuff, they're cooked. Like, there's nothing there because the only guy that can catch a pass is Zach Ertz. And Wentz seems to be completely locked on him at all times. And rightfully so, his other receivers don't get any separation. But the weirdest part about their offense is I've seen teams like this, and I know you have too, Brandon. There's a difference between when a unit plays together and for one another, and there's guys that are going out there just to do their job and to the best of their ability. And if things don't work, then they're just going to throw everybody else under the bus. And this team feels like a team that is not playing for one another at all. There's no juice. There's no energy. There's no urgency. It's really weird.
I expected the offense to look better, and when you were saying that, you know, I've seen offenses like this, I thought you were going to go a different direction. I thought you were going to go back to, it almost feels scribble play-ish, you know, where where Wentz is dropping back, and like you said, if Zach Ertz isn't open to throw the pass to, he doesn't necessarily have the trust of those other receivers, and then he's holding the football too long, and then the pocket closes around him, even though you have those big names on the offensive line. This was an offensive line that we talked about at the end of last season as being the top in the league, and going into this season still, you know, with those names like Lane Johnson, he might not even play with the being out with concussion this past week. So that could be a huge hit to them. And even still, I feel like the offensive line, it's just, it's Carson Wentz with the pocket collapsing around him and scrambling out and making plays.
Right. And even then, he's not always making plays. He's missing guys.
And that's not necessarily his fault, right? Because the guys that he has downfield are, you know, are dropping passes or.
Yeah, they're dropping passes. It's not great, but I think the thing that sticks out the most to me is how nobody plays with any extra fire. There's no extra energy. There's no, you know, when a guy makes a big play, everybody getting excited. They're just ho-hum going through the motions. And it reminded me very much of the Seahawks a couple years ago when, you know, they were still trying to figure out that rift in the locker room between some of the higher paid defensive players and Russ and the animosity of losing that Super Bowl. And just there, you know, there was friction there. Was it as bad as what Seth Wickersham said and all that? No, we've been over it a million times. But there definitely is, you know, some bit of a rub there. And the team just felt flat. And it's much like this Eagles team. They just feel flat.
Well, do you think it's a function then of maybe a Super Bowl hangover lasting into it more than one season? And now, you know, after coming back and losing in the playoffs in 2018, you know, the way they did to the Saints in the divisional round, that now they just, I think back to even some basketball teams where, you know, you make the playoffs, you feel like you have a good team. You're like, okay, we can flip the switch anytime, right? And we'll flip the switch and it'll be fine. And maybe that's the situation with the Eagles, because you look at their schedule to close out the season and it's cupcakes, 1-win, 2-win teams after the Seahawks, except for that division game against the Cowboys. So do you think that they just coast to this point in the season? And we've seen them step up against teams like the Green Bay Packers. And, mm-hmm. you know, they were up 10 points on the Patriots before Bill Belichick turned things around on them. So do you think it's that they're where you think that they're looking ahead at the schedule and saying, oh, yeah, we'll figure it out toward the end of the season. And we got a pretty easy division. All we have to do is beat the Cowboys down the stretch.
I honestly think that half the locker room genuinely wishes that Nick Foles was still there and Carson Wentz was the guy that was gone.
Ooh.
And not because they genuinely dislike Carson Wentz. I don't think there's the hatred that, again, the articles that came out over this offseason like to portray. But I do think there's a large schism in that locker room that preferred Nick Foles in the way that he played and the way that he led. And I think they would have rather gone forward with him.
And there's guys who are just locker room guys, right? And I guess maybe that is the way it is with Foles. They won the mm-hmm. Super Bowl with Foles. And yeah, I guess I could see that. I could see that lingering a little bit, especially among veterans.
Especially when you come out of the gate slow and the record isn't what everybody predicted it would be coming into the season. That's when the finger pointing starts very quickly, especially when you've made a major decision like that at the most important position in football.
I don't think there is any other way to go with that decision, though.
I'm not saying they made the wrong decision. I'm just trying to put myself in that locker room, the mindset of it, and try to figure out why this offense looks so disjointed. And it's tough to figure out. They just look flat. And what you saw Bill Belichick do against the Eagles last week is, after that, about first quarter or so, he was like, oh, okay, screw this. They're not running the ball no more.
Yeah.
And we're shutting that down no matter what. And once that's shut down, good luck with the rest of it. And they got some plays with Ertz, and they got it down close to the goal line within a strike at the end there to almost win it. But he was like, fine, go ahead and try to beat us that way. That's cool.
It definitely seems like that's the blueprint that other teams are trying. And I definitely saw that in the Buffalo game, that they were going to try and stop the run against the Eagles, and turnovers just bit the Buffalo Bills in that game. And so they mm-hmm. got behind, they couldn't really catch up. And you know, the Bills were turning it over too. That was kind of a turnover fest that just, I think the field position worked out in favor of the Eagles to where they were able to rack up points. And that's just the way that game worked out for them. So I do think that we're going to see the Seahawks try and stop the run against the Eagles, like make Wentz beat you. It kind of feels like the same game plan that we just saw against the 49ers.
I'm really glad that you put it that way, because after watching the Eagles, they feel like 49ers light right now. Mm-hmm. And when I say light, I'm not saying they're like markedly worse.
Yeah, but they have the defensive line like the 49ers do.
Correct.
They're going to try.
I think their secondary is talented.
Yeah, and they're going to try and stop your run, too, with their defense. Mm-hmm. Jim Schwartz, that's how he coordinates the defense. And I'm curious to see if the Seahawks are going to attack then the Eagles defense the same way that they did the Tampa Bay defense. And I know that you didn't particularly like that plan.
I loved that plan when it was in between the 20s.
Yeah.
Or, you know, third and eight. Cool. Go tear after that secondary, right? Or the occasional, you know, short yardage situation where it's play action and something clever, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Not every time. And you saw them get away from that a little bit late in the Niners game. And it, lo and behold, catfish works when you run the ball. It's funny.
Well, and you
but
really.
With
you,
that said, I do believe that the Seahawks will be able to come out and run the ball against the Eagles. If you're able to come out and run the ball against the Niners in their house,
yeah,
you should be able to go out there and run the ball against the Eagles. Now, I don't think it'll be a lot of the inside stuff, because really, I mean, Cox and Jernigan? Yeah, Jernigan. They're good players up front. I mean, that's really the strength of their defense is right there. What I noticed is usually when teams were able to kind of get the run game going against them, it's been on the perimeter. And I think that's something that the Seahawks can do well. I mean, Chris Carson runs to the perimeter well. Guess what? Rashad Penny runs well to the perimeter, too. We could see a little more of that. But before we're done talking about Eagles offense, I really hope that the Seahawks are practicing all week on the hard count on defense. Because Carson Wentz has terrorized the last two teams he's played with the hard count. He's good at it.
Yeah, and we saw Anza struggle with that against the 49ers. We've seen Clowney struggle with that a little bit from time to time. The Seahawks defensive line, they've they've been able to, they've been kind of jumpy.
They have. But boy, what the Bills and the Patriots both were extremely jumpy as well.
Well, we'll probably see that.
Oh, and the Bears, too. I watched that Bears game. The Bears got punked with the hard count all game.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Carson Wentz, too, because how he's doing this season. Because, you know, he's not necessarily having a bad year, but he's forcing the ball into spots. And it seems like the games where, even that game against the Bills, he was turning the ball over quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely takes a lot of risks. And I think that is a reflection of the receiving corps as a whole and their lack of ability to make separation happen. And so, yeah, he ends up gunning it into different places. But him and Ertz still have that, that connection that they've had for years. And you can see that pop up. I mean, you got to definitely take him into account when you're in the game plan mode for the Seahawks. And then also their other tight end, Goddard, he's been playing well also. So really, it's going to be a big game for the safeties and linebackers in coverage. And I do believe this linebacking core does have the ability to match up with people like Ertz. We've done well against good tight ends through the course of the season, and we've played the run very well throughout the season, too. I mean, we just went up against the Niners, who was supposedly the big bad running team of the whole league, and shut their ass down. And I believe that we can do that here. And if you do that and turn these Eagles one-dimensional, it's good night and good luck.
It's a little bit different of a running team, too, especially is, I don't know if it's Jordan Howard. Is he back from injury?
I believe he is.
Okay.
Because so you kind of got that thunder and lightning thing going, you know, with Howard and Sanders. And
yeah, and Sanders is the better pass catcher. He's tearing people up out of the backfield catching passes. Like, if they're... Yep. If the Seahawks are getting pressure with their front four, which hopefully they are, I could definitely see them going to the screen game and dumping it off to Sanders, because that dude, once he gets his hands on the ball, he's making guys miss in space.
Yeah, basically, I had in my notes regarding the Eagles offense, cover the tight ends in the swing pattern to the backs.
Yeah.
And like, then you're good to go. And you're good to go. But we've seen over the years, tight ends tore us up for the longest time. They've kind of gotten that on lockdown over the last couple of years. But boy, the dump off to the back, that has been one of the Achilles heels of this defense. It's been so bad. So what I'm hoping is that with the lack of deep threat that the Eagles present,
yeah,
that guys are playing up a little bit more, a lot more press, a lot more man coverage, and you're able to just kind of sit on all those short little 7-yard curls, and then you can drive and break on the balls to the running backs out of the backfield. That would be the way I'd do it.
That's where Diggs playing free safety could really come into play in this game if he's the guy back there.
Or at slot, dude. Like, imagine him being even closer to the line of scrimmage, being able to help and run support and go ahead and close that distance on the backs when they catch it out of the backfield.
Yeah, good point.
And then you have Blair behind him laying the wood. And you don't have to worry about getting beat over the top as much. So you put Blair and McDougal back there. Okay, McDougal's not the greatest free safety in the world, but he's a serviceable free safety. Like, this would be the game I would make that risk.
Yeah.
Then you can match up with the tight ends. You know what I mean? Like, it just makes all the sense in the world to me.
I'm glad you're dialed in on this, because I think I'm dialed in more on the offense. Despite the defense being solid up front, despite them having some solid corners, this Eagles defense is susceptible to the deep ball, and they're susceptible to play action. So, yeah, when I talk about when I asked you about the game plan on offense before and if they had run the ball against this Eagles defensive line, you better hope they do, because it is that play action that they're susceptible to. And we could see some deep shots to Tyler Lockett. Hopefully he's well enough for this game. Deep shots to DK Metcalf. It seems like no matter who is playing this Eagles defense, they are throwing it deep, and that's where they're having success.
Yeah, and I think you kind of have to break down their defense in two different ways. I mean, kind of pre-Darby and Mills coming back and post-Darby and Mills coming back. They're two starting corners because they definitely play a lot better with those two starting quarterbacks. Now, am I saying these guys are lockdown corners? Absolutely not. Are they very serviceable NFL-level players? Absolutely. And they make a big difference over the dumpster fires that they were running out there for the first about 6 weeks of the year. You know, it was guys off the street, people you'd never heard of.
Yeah.
And I think that makes their numbers look a lot worse than they are. But if I go back to their last two games, Bears and Patriots, what I saw was a lot of opportunities downfield to be had. But unfortunately, those two teams don't have a quarterback that can make those throws anymore. Like Mitchell Trubisky, he could get out of trouble a little bit against the Eagles. But then when those opportunities presented himself in the secondary play to go ahead and really pull the trigger, you know, he's spraying it all over the field and he's terrible. And then you go and you see Tom Brady and that pass rush knows exactly where to tee off on because he can't move anymore and he doesn't want to get hit. And the problem is that he can't get out of the way and now he can't really throw that deep ball anymore. Tom Brady looks very mortal this year.
Yeah.
And it was very obvious. I mean, he's missing all sorts of guys. Then on top of that, you look at both those receiving cores in comparison to the Seahawks and the Bears receiving core. Good Lord, what a joke show. And then you look at the Patriots receiving core and there's not a dude who can get separation deep. Like the Seahawks have much better personnel to take advantage of that Philadelphia secondary, especially when you look at the wide receiving core. I believe Tyler Lockett's going to play. It sounds like he is. He'll be a force.
Yeah.
And DK and Josh Gordon out there running deep posts on these guys. Good freaking luck. And then you happen to have a very mobile quarterback who makes it difficult on that defensive line and tires them out. Move that pocket. That's something that worked really well for the Bears. And take those deep shots. And guess what? Russ can hit the deep ball. He might be the best in the game at it. So I love this matchup for the Seahawks on paper.
Yeah, on paper. But how it plays out is going to be a different question because I was talking with Michael Kista, Bleeding Green Nation, on Thursday, and he was saying that how the Eagles are just a slow-starting team. Well, the Seahawks are kind of a slow-starting team. So
correct.
Both these teams, if we're scoreless or it's, you know, a 7-7 tie at the half, then it's going to come down to the fourth quarter. And I definitely like our fourth quarter quarterback over Carson Wentz, who has one game-winning drive on the season, zero fourth quarter comebacks. Yeah, I'll take our quarterback who has five and is undefeated on the road this season.
And I'll take Chris Carson and Penny versus Howard and Sanders as well. Like, I think that our running backs are far superior. And honestly, our offensive line has been able to move people around and the run game has been successful no matter what. And then you pair that with Russell Wilson. Now, my concern about this game is I'm going to go out on a limb because it's very easy to come on this podcast every week and say it's going to be a close game within 7 points. And Russ will have the ball towards
the end. Because that's what happens every single week.
Pretty much, right? I'm going to go out on a limb and predict this is not the week for that. I think this either goes terribly wrong or really right. That's I don't see really much in between. The terribly wrong looks a little like this to me. Big win against the 49ers on the road. Flying high. Go to the bye week. Everybody goes on vacation. They come back reading all their press clippings. Happy as pie, right? Just having themselves a time.
Yeah.
Then they finally lock in and they look at the Eagles and they're like, 5-5? These guys haven't been crap all year. We'll go out there and we'll beat up on these guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go out there. You start out slow, like we generally do. And the Eagles being a very motivated team right now, I mean, they need every extra win that they can get.
And a physical defense.
And a physical defense on the road. I just feel like this team could come out unbelievably flat, end up down three scores early, come back to get it within two, and lose by like 17 when it's all said and done. Right. Like that's the bad way I see it going. The other way I see it going is the Seahawks come out and they apply that mentality that they talk about all the time. Every week is a championship week and they're very focused. Now, do I think they come out and score a bunch of points right away in the first quarter? No, because they don't do that.
Right.
But they come out, they play the Eagles pretty even. They take that first punch of the home team being juiced up and everything. You get to halftime, you're down three, up three, something like that, right? Russ comes out in the third quarter in a couple adjustments and the Eagles fold. The second Russ scores, they just fold. They're tired of the season. They're 5-5. We're not going anywhere. Wentz throws a bad pick, something along those lines. And we win by like three scores. I don't see it being in the middle.
Yeah. Interesting.
Because this Eagles team is either genuinely bad or genuinely good. I don't see them being genuinely mediocre.
That's a really good point, just to worry the way they've approached the season. It's a very up and down and weird kind of team to figure out. And the defenses of these two teams, I feel like they match up similarly. Even the stats kind of bear it out. The completion percentages that they're allowing about the same. The points, the yards per play about the same. Red zone scoring percentage about the same. I think the Seahawks are just a couple percentage points better. Third down conversions the same. So with everything being equal, I am concerned about the physical style of defense that they play and their ability to create turnovers and the Seahawks' inability to hold on to the football. Hopefully Pete Carroll has that just drilled into their heads coming back after the bye week and after that game against San Francisco where they put the ball on the ground so many times. If they drill that in, if they take care of the football, then yeah, I could see this being more of a blowout because this is the better red zone scoring team. You do have Russell Wilson who completes his passes to a much higher level than the Eagles do.
And the receiving core is by far a superior unit compared to the Eagles.
I mean, you could point to if we're going to do a position by position breakdown, then they have the tight ends that we don't.
What's his scoop with Luke Wilson? Is he out for this game?
I we're just going to have to watch the injury report. I got the sense that he may be out this game.
Not a game changer, but yeah, if I'm looking at how these teams have played over the course of this season, this should be a victory. And if they do beat the Eagles on the road this week, this will be the game that at that point, especially if the defense looks like it did against the Niners, at that point, I'm as confident as anybody about this team beating anybody throughout the course of this season and having the aspirations of being a legit Super Bowl contender. If they come out and they take care of business in this game, the defense looks right, there's not another team in this league I'm afraid of.
If the Seahawks go to 6 wins after this game, after a win over the Eagles, then that matches their road win total. With 2 games left on the schedule, they would be 6-0, and they were 6-2 on the road that 2013 season.
Yeah, they have played very well on the road, so that does give me some confidence as well. And then just the offensive line showing against that Niners defensive front gave me a lot of hope, too. Like, and really, you go back to, they've played pretty well against that Rams defensive front, which is a very good defensive front.
Yeah.
They've had some difficult matchups. I mean, even the Bucs defensive front. And they've held their own.
I saw some of the Eagles guys giving the Seahawks offensive line a pretty hard time when they were looking at the game tape for the Seahawks offensive line. And I feel like it's saying that we could use the help of a certain Raiders offensive line coach with what they're seeing on tape. But you know what? I see this offensive line as one of the better ones we've had in a few years. And they're about mediocre.
Exactly, which is fine. Because that also plays into Russell Wilson's style as well. The offensive line is playing at a high enough level to get it done. And even with the backup center, who's undersized. So, you know, have as much fun with that as you'd like. And I hope you enjoy choking on that L at the end of the game on Sunday.
I will say, though, that Eagles fans are not very confident going into this week.
No.
I think they see the issues similarly with Carson Wentz. And you know, maybe they're also getting that from the team a little bit, like you were kind of dialing into.
I kind of feel like Frank Reich stole the playbook when he left Philadelphia and took it to Indy.
Yeah, Indy is one of those teams that I look at them and I go, how is this team doing as well as it is? And it's Frank
those Reich. Guys, look, when they play with juice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the Seahawks this year, they play with juice. Like this is clearly Russell's team. Everybody's in it together. They have the same mentality. A lot like their earlier days of the LOB, right? When these guys talked about brotherhood and all that. Like in a league that is so close when it comes to physical talent and then also coaching talent and you know, all the things that go into being a good football team, like everything is so close that the smallest thing like camaraderie and actually loving the dude you play next to and that you would go out and do anything for. Like that is the big difference between, you know, a team that's 5-5 or a team that's 8-2.
And I would argue that it's a bigger difference. That type of camaraderie, that type of brotherhood, it makes a bigger difference than those fourth down decisions that Pete Carroll could make on whether to go for it or not.
Yeah, that's been a little up and down in a roller coaster this year. But, you know, again, that's one of those things where we've kind of got on Pete a little bit this year. And I go, yeah, I don't love all of that. But right. Is there anybody else I'd rather have right now?
No. All right, Adam. Well, I think that does it for a nice little breakdown against the Eagles. Email from Jason Harding reminding us of the time change. And because we talked about it last week, how this game got flexed out of the Sunday night matchup and into the early morning, or well, morning for us, but the early games for the NFL. 1 p.m. Eastern, and he makes a good point here. He says, I believe they changed the Eagles game so that the Hawks 49ers game week 17 can be in primetime. Teams can only have 5 primetime games, and this change would leave that game open.
Oh, well, there you go. I guess there's a method to the madness.
Maybe the NFL knows what they're doing after all. And getting into the second half of the show, hey, why don't we start it off with an email? We got one here from Liad, says, because we were talking last week, we were bragging a little bit about the time zone that we live in and how really the Mountain Time Zone is the perfect time zone for football.
It's the best.
And maybe Liad agrees a little bit. He says, after you talk about how good your time zone is, I want to tell you how bad mine is. I serve in the Israeli army, so I get out from the office at about 8:30 and go to sleep. I wake up at 3 o'clock and watch the game. Around 5 o'clock, the Israeli army killed a very bad terrorist in the Gaza Strip, and they want to start firing rockets against us. So after a few hours of sleep, I stay awake until 8:30, considering a relocation.
Well, honestly, this should be a do better. I mean, you know, this whole like Palestinian Israeli thing, like, you know, maybe just stop fighting. Then, you know, Leon could like not have to worry about getting his sleep in after watching the Seahawks, because clearly that is the issue that matters. You know, I mean, this whole conflict, it just seems petty. Come on, do better.
It feels like it's been going on for a little while. And yeah,
for a minute.
Maybe they just haven't considered stopping, Adam. Maybe you throwing it out there. Maybe you throwing it out there. That'll just solve everything.
It's funny. Like, everybody acts like this is so hard. I mean, just go over there and be like, guys, stop.
Enough.
And then you stop and then everything's fine. And you know what? The cool thing is I actually have a suggestion for World Hunger as well. I could end that in 3 minutes too. So, you know, just really ask me anything. I've got some really creative approaches to these, you know, situations that seem complicated, but really are super simple. Just stop fighting. Liad needs his sleep.
Liad definitely. That is one thing I think we can all agree on, is that Liad needs his sleep, and he needs to be able to get up and watch Seahawks football appropriately in the middle of the night. So stop screwing with that.
Yeah, exactly. Have some consideration, you warring peoples. Come on, do better.
Do better. All right. Well, welcome to the flock. These people don't need to do better. They're already doing better. They are in the flock at getintheflock.com. And let's start off with Smells Like 12 Spirit, in with $5 a month.
Hey, all right. We appreciate that. These donations really help to go towards keeping things going for us. And then we'll talk a little bit about some of the things we do with those donations later on here.
Chris Green in the flock at $5. Welcome to the flock to Chris.
Hey, all right. Thanks, Chris. Now, there's a name I can't make fun of.
No, and Green, another Ring of Honor last name, so gotta like that.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Darren Sturgill in at $5. Welcome to the flock to Darren.
It's a $5 kind of week.
It is. We got one more $5, and with N. Gillespie in at $5, so welcome to the flock to Neil.
Oh, all right. I was a little confused there. N, like he's trying to be all incognito.
Maybe I just outed N by going with the first name there.
Neil's in the flock. He's a little flocker. He can't hide no more.
So you have to go with something really anonymous, like Smells Like 12 Spirit, for us to know that you don't want your name out there.
Right. Yeah. And that you clearly are a Nirvana fan.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Got an email in from our newest member of the flock, Neil. Says, after listening to the recent podcast, which you discussed, Dick John Thomas Richards made me chuckle a lot. I felt the urge to join the flockers. Also, I can't carry the freeloader guilt anymore. So I will henceforth pay my way and stand proud with the other flockers listening to your show guilt-free. So
catfish
the whiners,
catfish
the Norwich City being an Ipswich Town fan. They play with a round ball. These are our local rivals, and the hate is the same. So keep up the good work, and thank you for making me laugh. Go Hawks.
Hey, I just appreciate that Neil also appreciates general name humor.
Based on the reaction that we got from last week, we may need to do more of those in the future.
Yeah, I guess so.
We got a new member of the flock because of it.
Right. And look, I never quite know what's going to resonate with the audience as we just talk out of our butts here. But I now understand that general name humor is the ticket.
Something to think about.
Yeah, there we go.
And welcome to the flock, and thanks for the one-time donation from Leon Refleur in at $15.
Oh, wow. Well, appreciate that a ton. So basically, you just like tripled up on the $5 theme for the week.
Yeah, tripled up, yeah. And then we had a raise from Josh Shoemaker, who raised up to $12.12 and is now in the Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I saw that. Welcome, Josh. And I know Josh is very curious if anybody that is listening to the pod is going to the Eagles game. He'd love to meet up.
Yeah, he writes in a note, says, I am a New Yorker and have been a fan of the Hawks since 1998. It feels so good to be a Hawk for life. I've been listening to you guys for several years, and I've been hooked since that first episode. It feels good to up my pledge. You guys deserve it. My wife and I will be at the game in Philly, and we're hoping to meet up with some Hawkers before the game. Can you put me in touch with some other Seahawkers who will be there? So, yes, in the Ring of Honor, we've hooked him up. And yeah, if we have some others who are going to the game and just want to email in and say, hey, pass my name around to others who want to meet up. I think we're, and then we're sharing the meetup location for the Seahawks road crew. So I think that's a good place for everybody to gather up.
Cool. Yeah, no, that all works. And it'll be nice to see the 12s there in the stands when the Battle of Birds commence. And we beat down those dirty Eagles.
This was definitely a game on my radar that I was thinking this would be one to go to.
Well, here's the thing. I am a little concerned about this game, Brandon, because I had an omen on this trip coming back from Louisiana.
Uh-oh.
That, it didn't feel good. Didn't feel good because I lost a game of chicken to an eagle. Like a legit eagle. I'm driving down the road. There's some roadkill. And there's an eagle like feeding on it, right? And it's a fairly narrowish road. It's just outside of Yellowstone. And, the track is to kind of like straddle the roadkill, right? And, you know, just continue down the road.
Yeah.
And this eagle's like tearing into the thing, right? As I'm getting closer and closer, I'm like, he'll fly off. He'll fly off. He'll fly off. And as I get closer and closer and closer, he just snaps his head up and just gives me the steely eagle eye.
Uh-huh.
And just like, no, I'm not moving for nothing. I have to jack up the brakes, get over on the shoulder of the road and like putt around him as he just gave me a mean mug the whole way by. I lost a game of chicken to an eagle, and that feels like a bad omen for this game.
That feels like a really bad omen. You just need to truck it like Chris Carson would do.
I know, but that feels like a felony, killing a bald eagle with your car.
But what would you rather have, a felony on your record or maybe a good omen for this weekend?
Yeah, because you said, would I rather have the good omen or the felony? The felony gives me the good omen. So that's not the choice. The choice is a bad omen.
Oh, right. Or the felony.
I think I'm going with bad omen. I think I'm going bad omen. I'm not made for prison.
Okay.
That probably wouldn't be good for my deal. It'd be hard to do the pod. I know that.
It would be. That's true. So,
yeah.
Yeah. What will happen, though, is we have the excuse now in the can. Because after the losses, people email in. They give their excuse for why the Seahawks lost. Now nobody has to email in. Now we know. Now we know what happens if it goes bad.
Dude, that eagle was a bad
catfish.
He wasn't moving for no one. He wasn't. I was very stunned. Now, if I'd been like my buddy Jared, our buddy Jared, this was years ago. We're driving in Arizona. and he lost a game of chicken to a Roadrunner. Who like legit wouldn't move.
Yeah.
Now he would have been road pizza.
Yeah.
If I had him driving. Mainly because of lack of felony.
One time when my mom was driving down the road and she saw a bird in the road and thought something similar that, oh, it'll fly away when I get closer to it. And it was a turkey. So,
oh,
a turkey met its end.
Yeah, I see. Was it the flightless part that made that a little difficult for him?
I think it made it a little tougher, especially when you're expecting it to fly.
So she won her game of chicken against turkey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, well, you could say one. She's had to live with the guilt since.
Now, screw that. I've hit a pheasant before. He deserved it.
Lisa Wilson in with an email, and she has some turkey hole humor.
Right. See, that apparently that resonates, too.
She says, hi, Brandon and Adam. Hope you enjoyed the bye week and are getting fired up for week 12. One perk to getting bumped from the Sunday night slot is that we've seen Jimmy G play under pressure, and it's not pretty. Any additional pressure that the Sunday night cameras might elicit on his fragile constitution stands to benefit the Seahawks. So let's get a Sunday morning win over the Eagles and chase it with a 49ers loss to Green Bay. Should make for a good Sunday. I wrote in to share this funny story with you guys. My nephew Jack is 8 years old, and he's a huge Seahawks fan. He can spout off team stats with the best of them and has an uncanny comprehension of football strategy for an 8-year-old. He was tasked with writing a Thanksgiving story for his third grade class. This is what he wrote. I Am Not a Turkey by Jack Hidzik. Hi, I am Russell Wilson, but you think I am a turkey. Maybe I was when I threw an interception and the Seahawks almost lost, but I am a football player, not a turkey. I am famous. A turkey can't be famous. I live in Bellevue and my favorite holiday is Thanksgiving. How could I be a turkey if I am Russell Wilson and Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday? How could I be a turkey? There you have it. Russell Wilson may have thrown it in the turkey hole, but he's not a turkey. Perhaps we should send a copy of Jack's story to Pete Prisco and the Vegas odds makers because the bye week seems to have given them eyes only for Lamar Jackson. Ugh. Anyway, hope you enjoyed the Thanksgiving-related humor as only a third grader assignment could provide. On that note, happy Thanksgiving and go Hawks.
Hey, go Hawks. Like, somebody's raising a kid right there because he's... Absolutely right. The logic is flawless. I mean, he's not a turkey.
No.
He's a Seahawk.
Yeah.
And a champion.
And even though he does
and
try
a football and, player.
Even though he does try and drop it in the turkey hole against the 49ers and it does go for an interception, he still gets the win. Not a turkey.
That's exactly right. Not a turkey.
All right, Adam. Well, that does it for email. That does it for our Welcome to the Flock. If you want to get in the flock, getintheflock.com. Or you can go to SeahawkersPodcast.com/support if you want to help support the show. And we do have some exciting news to share about where some of the support has gone over the past week. But before we get there, how about we do some Do Better?
All right, man. You or me?
I feel passionately about my Do Better. So I will kick this off, Adam, because...
All right.
We now have robots telling us how to finish our sentences. And it started with email. Google with their Gmail. You know, you go in there and you start typing an email and it does it the same way when you do your search, right? You start typing in a word and it autofills, right? Well, now it's moving from email to actual the Google Docs. So now it's moving toward typing out actual documents. And I'm worried about this because it's one thing to have an email autocomplete, but if you're writing something, if you're writing a report, you know, you don't need the suggestions. Our kids, I'm thinking about my kids here. By the time my kids are in high school and college, are they going to even have to bother doing any research, or are they going to just start typing and go and allow Google to autofill their own research for them? A person who knows how to do this right could have a paper completely written. They don't have to read the book. All they have to do is start typing certain little facts from the books with the main characters, and the paper will write itself. And so for Google, for making us all dumber in the future, I can see where this is going. You're not helping us. You're hurting us. Do better.
You know, it's funny. You hate the slippery slope argument. That's one of your
This is
more
a slippery slope, but I...
And the thing is this even goes back further than you think, because this started with spell check, dude. Like, can you spell anymore? I can't.
I have my words that still trip me up, but yes.
Of course.
This did start with spell check.
Yes, and that was a slippery slope. And now here we are to autofilling. Next thing you know, your kids will be going to college as a bunch of dummies who can't write a paper. It's the end of America.
Well, not only do we have autofill, I went on and, you know, the doesn't Elon Musk have something to do with the AI that's you can type in a phrase and it'll like write a complete a thought out after just typing in a few words? Have you seen this?
Hard telling not knowing. I know Elon not a big fan of the AI, like fears it.
Well, maybe
like
this isn't an Elon thing. Maybe this isn't an Elon thing, but I did.
Well, I mean, but he's in it. I mean, they're doing the AI on the cars to self-drive, you know, so.
Well, I did go on this site and I typed in Adam Emmert is better at life than, and then I hit generate.
Yeah.
Here's what it came up. Here's what AI came up with. And, it, you know, it does well in actually producing sentences that are complete sentences. And it makes sense. It's not like a monkey on a typewriter or anything like that.
It's not like a Mad Lib.
It might be like a Mad Lib.
Okay.
Adam Emmert is better at life than the average person. And I mean that in a lot of different ways. He is a highly motivated, highly intelligent, and highly talented young man who wants to do everything he can to make the world a better place. He's the type of person who would like to have a, quote, office in every state, unquote. So he and his two brothers set up their first shop in California back in 1992. When his first brother started college, Emmert's wife Lisa decided to start a second shop with the rest of their family at the same time.
Did you type in the name Lisa?
No, this is what it produced.
Because that's my sister's name. That's a little creepy. Okay.
It creeped me out too.
All right.
Maybe it's pulling it from online and it's going through the female Emmert names. And it pulled Lisa out from the AI within the ether. And it's just like, oh, well, that's Emmert's wife.
Since she didn't marry her brother and married somebody else, her last name is now Bartholomew.
Well, right. But I'm sure her maiden name is out there somewhere.
Oh, probably.
So it assigned, and now it's assigned to you in the story. So it's soon they had their own two shops and were able to keep growing and building a successful company, selling high quality products in a way that was both practical and aesthetically pleasing.
I mean, that sounds just like me in my redneck, apparently hillbilly, incestuous sister. So that's cool.
So there you go. AI. That's where we're going.
Well, you know, the funny thing is that this AI actually may have gotten this situation that is my do better for this week more correct than everybody involved with this situation. And my do better this week, Brandon, is for every single human being on either side who is involved with this Colin Kaepernick workout.
Oh,
what a joke from all angles. So let's just start out with the idea, no matter how offensive you find Colin Kaepernick taking a knee in front of the flag, let's say it's just abhorrent.
Yeah.
Is that worse than beating up a woman and then throwing her on a couch full of assault rifles? Like that dude from the Panthers that ended up on the Cowboys? Who still played after that? What the hell was his name? Greg Hardy.
Greg Hardy, yeah. So on a scale from puppies to Greg Hardy, where does Colin Kaepernick land?
Well, apparently worse, because Greg Hardy got chance after chance right out of the gate, and Colin Kaepernick can't get a real look after 3 years. Now, with that said, he's not without blame here. We'll get to that in a minute. But so the NFL decides, oh, okay, I guess it's been long enough for you to be in purgatory, because how dare you, you know, take a knee as per the Green Beret instructed you to do this in a peaceful, respectful way.
Not instructed, but hey, this might be a better way.
Right. Yeah. What a jerk. So anyways, at this point, the NFL says, okay, fine, we'll throw you a frickin' bone, but you're going to play by our rules, and I'm going to make sure that you bow the head, you know, in front of the King Goodell and make sure that it looks like you will go ahead and do everything you're told like a good little NFL subject.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
And so they set up this workout that, number one, wasn't going to be released to the public.
No media invited.
Exactly. No media invited. None of that stuff. Right? They did it on short notice. So let's hope he's been training, right? And it looked like he did from the little bit of footage that we saw, right?
They did it on a Saturday.
And basically, like, all right, let's come and see if you can shut your catfish mouth and just play football, right?
Yeah.
And they kind of like kowtow him into this. And then I understand from Colin's perspective, him being like, oh yeah, well, screw you. Because if I go and do this workout in private, you're just going to say that I sucked.
Yeah. Anonymous sources who were there said Colin looks terrible.
Right. He lost his arm strength, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And you're just going to keep me out of the league anyways. Well, screw you. I'm going to set up a workout on my own and change the venue and put it an hour away from here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make it open to the media, right?
Well, and that was after the whole injury waiver thing, which they said, well, sign this particular injury waiver that is not the normal one, apparently. I mean, I haven't read them, but...
Yeah, so they try to trip
again,
him up.
Again, another hoop to jump through that is out of the ordinary.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and then you get the crybaby catfish ass scouts who are like, wait, what?
I got to drive an hour
down the road. I can't possibly go. My flight is in just 2 hours. I got to leave. Wait, you're telling me that your billionaire owner can't spring for the $300 change ticket fee to make your flight a little later in the day? What else are you doing?
Yeah.
Give me a break. So like the majority of them don't even show up for the workout. And then here's where like I look at Colin and be like, what the hell are you doing? Like at the end of the workout, he starts running his mouth and being like, oh, you owners, tell your owners to stop being scared. Right. And like, just saying like blatant stuff that is going to piss off the, old heads in the league. Right. Because at the end of the day, you do have to play, to steal Pat McAfee's phrase, play in their sandbox. Right.
Right.
Now, you can still express yourself. You can still be the icon that you've made yourself into. You can still speak to the issues that you think are important.
Yeah.
But don't smear it in the owners' faces and then act like somehow like you're just being blackballed completely at this point. All right. Like you did it a little to yourself. The NFL kind of tried to set you up for failure. Everybody handled this in a piss poor way. And I'm just sick of the whole thing. Everybody that was involved in this situation, do better.
There you go. Everybody.
Everybody. What a joke.
Yeah. Well, we thought we were done with it, but.
It's like this timeline unfolded where like there was all these decisions to be made, right? Yeah. Like in space time. And like somehow this is the timeline where every wrong decision was made by every person involved.
I'm trying to rack my brain for a time where the NFL set up a workout for a player. Because players,
right?
Normally teams just say, hey, come visit us and do a right. workout.
Yeah, well, this was the league's attempt to throw up the shield
yeah.
to protect all the teams to see if anybody was interested in a quarterback needy team.
Yeah.
But more importantly, they set it up with all these hoops to jump through to see if he'd be a good little soldier. It was gross. That part of it was gross. And I can understand Colin being like, oh, yeah, thumb your nose a little bit, move the location. Okay, go ahead and move the location, make it open to the public. All of that is something that nobody can argue with.
Yeah.
Right? And then at the end of it, just be gracious. Appreciate the NFL giving me this opportunity. If you really want to play, and some people say he doesn't want to play, I think that's bullshit. Catfish! Otherwise, he wouldn't have looked as, in shape and ready to go as he did.
Right. You don't keep working out. As if you're going to stay in shape or you're keeping yourself available for an opportunity.
Yeah. And there's nowhere else he's going to get NFL kind of money in his life right now.
Yeah.
There's just not.
And he's not going to do the XFL.
No. So at the end of the day, he handled it poorly on the back end. The NFL handled it crappy on the front end. And it was just a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
A frustration.
Well, Adam, if you didn't manage to upset everybody on either side of the issue with your particular take, calling everybody out, I'm gonna make it even worse with my Better at Life this week.
All right. Well, because what I hope is that I pissed off everybody, and then also simultaneously everybody was like, "Yeah, I know what, whatever, man."
Well, I feel like I'm digging myself into an area where people are entrenched in their passionate viewpoints on this particular issue with Better at Life, and Adam, I'm giving my preemptive Better at Life nod to quarterback Lamar Jackson, who is leading the Pro Bowl vote right now. And the reason why I'm doing it preemptively is because 2 weeks from right now, I expect to be giving Lamar Jackson my candidacy for MVP. That's right. I'm setting myself up, Adam. I see the look on your face. I'm setting myself.
Yeah, I'm wondering how Russell feels with those bus tire tracks that just ran right over his chest. The dump. Both axles, bud.
I'm setting myself up to hop on the Lamar Jackson hype train because over these next 2 weeks, Rams on Monday Night Football. Next Sunday, he has the San Francisco 49ers at home in Baltimore. If Lamar Jackson could take down those two teams in back-to-back weeks, that's my MVP through 13 weeks. And it still gives Russell 3 weeks left in the season to catch him. So, but as for right now, I have my high expectations. I believe in you, Lamar. Now go out there, get it done, because you are better at life than Skip Bayless.
Well, you know, I saw somebody post in the Ring of Honor that, you know, if you could trade the MVP, you know, to Lamar Jackson for the winning Super Bowl, like basically winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Would you do it? And it's like, yeah, well, duh.
Well, duh.
But people are very polarized on this MVP race thing. No doubt about it.
Well, but I do want both. I mean, I want Wilson to have the MVP and I want the Super Bowl. So.
Well, I just hope the writers follow the precedent that's been set over the years that they themselves have set the voters for the MVP. And that's always been, there's always some new and exciting player that comes up that challenges, right?
Yeah.
And is in the race. But usually it's gone to the guy who it's his turn.
Right.
And this would be my number one argument for Russ over Lamar. And this is taking nothing away from Lamar. He's had a fantastic year and he's playing very well.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that he is not deserving of the conversation, but I've seen Lamar do this for 1 year, the majority, or not even a full year.
Okay. Well, when you say that the media has set the precedent, didn't they break that last year? Wasn't it Drew Brees' turn? And it was the up and comer that they gave the MVP award to?
Yeah, but he also threw for, you know, 5 gajillion yards and 50 touchdowns and, you know, just smashed NFL all-time records. So there's that. Okay. And he led the team to the AFC Championship game. So you can't get real mad there. But with Lamar, again, I've seen it for the majority of 1 year.
Yeah.
I know Russell Wilson's greatness. You want to know how I know that? He's been at it for 8.
Right.
So that consistency has to count for something.
I want you to back off. If Lamar's listening, I needed to give him that pep talk to get through these next couple weeks with 2-0 so that he can take the Baltimore Ravens 2-0 over these next 2 weeks.
I can see how our parenting styles must have differed throughout the lives of our child. See, you're very much more carrot where I'm very much more stick. You suck. Go prove me wrong.
Yeah, well. Maybe Lamar responds to both those approaches. Let's hope.
Well, there you go. See, we covered it all. All right, man. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for my neighbor Wayne and his wife and all of you little flockers. And this all kind of came together in a really cool thing that we've now done for the last couple years. But my neighbor Wayne, retired guy, you know, kind of looking for things to do. And every year they have put together a list of donors that they go around and kind of hit up and try to get as many turkeys as they possibly can to donate to the area's local radio turkey drive. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this year they had a kind of a large goal. They were looking at 1,000 pounds of turkey to be donated.
Yeah.
And I'll be catfish. Damned if he didn't do it, you know, and part of the thing is he couldn't have done it without your help because part of one of the things we try to do, I mean, Brandon always buys amazing prizes for all of the pick'em leagues and all of that stuff and, you know, equipment costs and things of that nature. He does with the donation money that you guys all give us, the little flockers. But another thing we try to do is donate to Wayne's effort for the turkey drive. And you guys stepped up in a big way on that. And lo and behold, he hit it. He hit that 1,000 pound mark. And it wouldn't be without everything you guys do for the show as well. So better at life, Wayne Dog, and better at life, all you little flockers. You guys are better at life than Skip Bayless.
Better at life, indeed. It was cool seeing the Facebook post from the local radio station from the drop off of the 1,000 pounds of turkey. 1,000 pounds. That's huge.
Yeah. So next year he wants to go for a ton of turkeys.
Ton of turkey. A turkey ton.
Yeah. So if any of you want to get in on that next year, specifically, you know, hit us up and we'll go from there. But
there we go.
Pretty cool, but couldn't be done without you guys. We really appreciate it. And really kind of, you know, shows what the season should be about. As Christmas ramps up and I, you know, choke on my own vomit after every consumer commercial that pops up. These little things help me make, you know, help make me feel a little bit better.
And it's because of the flock that we're able to make that happen. So, yes, thank you to the flock. A happy Thanksgiving if we are not back here before the holiday next week. And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
That type of camaraderie, that type of brotherhood, it makes a bigger deep. It makes a bigger difference. Oh my gosh. It makes
You're going to make it, bud.
It makes a bigger difference